Well, well, well. We are back, unfortunately, over Zoom. Marnie has is living her life in her room. She's sent herself away and doesn't want to come outside after yesterday's performance. Marnie is a big scary mechanism. World. Well, yeah, absolutely. It's a coping mechanism. yeah, do you want to give us a quick rundown on how we're going to do this pod after a pretty dark day?
It's a really good question. I'm not really sure myself. No, I'm kidding. hello, everyone. Thank you again for joining us. We know this is probably going to be a hard listen this week in case the last 5 weeks haven't been hard enough. we have both just kind of gone away. We've sort of written our own notes on the game yesterday and kind of how we feel like things went and what to look for in the future and also sort of like the changes that we would make and things like that in, for the team. So we kind of just thought we would give you a bit of an overview about how we're feeling after yesterday. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there whose thoughts and feelings echo what we will say. And then we just thought we'd talk through our notes and just sort of some talking points from the game. And that'll be that. Hopefully you guys can, you know, feel a little bit better after this or feel like your thoughts have been heard and spoken for. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think yeah, the podcast is always trying to be a channel or a vessel for all of the fans' thoughts. And, you know, myself and Marnie have some very different, I think even at the football, we both realized, I think Marnie's ever seen me that seething at a football game before. And we've definitely got very different, we've definitely got very different ways of dealing and coping and supporting.
I was very tame yesterday, I will say. That was very tame. I'm usually pretty unhinged, but usually I'm more unhinged if there's a bit more emotion in the game, whereas like there really wasn't much emotion
building and through
in yesterday's game. Yeah. So no, that was, I was very tame yesterday. I was actually very, very impressed with my behavior.
Well, look, I'm proud of you, Marnie, but the statement remains, we have very different ways of doing this. And hopefully the way I feel and the way Marnie feels is accurate to how someone who's listening to this is feeling. So, you know, me and Marnie are going to try not to, you know, butt heads too much because we both accept each other's feelings and as people. And yeah, we're going to have a bit of a vent. We're going to be pretty negative and then we're going to try and, you know, bring some hope and some light to the situation. I think it's important to say
just take one guess. Just take one guess as to who's going to go the negative route and who's going to go the positive route.
The answer may surprise you. Find out after these ads. I think the important thing to start with is we love the club and we're passionate people. Nothing we're going to say is a personal attack or, you know, trying to hurt anybody at the club at all. This is just us as fans talking. We're hurt. And we will point out some specific players and things like that, but in no way are we trying to, you know, hurt anyone or be rude or anything like that to anybody. It's just us venting our frustration. So if anyone from North is listening, we love you guys. We're going to back you forever, but we need to get this out. And it's no personal attack on anybody. It's just,
it's never personal. It's never personal.
It's just how we feel.
And hurting. I think the fact that we are both so upset today is just sort of a reflection on how much the club does mean to us and how much we do care and how much we do want things to get better. You know, we both sit here every week and we invest time into the podcast and, you know, interacting with you guys. And again, everyone who came to chat with us yesterday, we met so many of you guys, and it's just, you know, I'm always so blown away about how, you know, well together everyone kind of is. And I know that everyone's really upset, but we all kind of still unite as one. And I think that's so important in times like these. I touched on that last week and in on the pod as well. And the fact that you guys, you know, do listen to, you know, what we have to say and, you know, find some comfort in it, you know, really means a lot. So we do really appreciate it. Thank you guys as well for that. And thank you guys for sticking by us as much as you're sticking by the club. You know, we don't think this is easy. We don't find it easy, but we do it because we love the club and we want to, you know, do something for you guys. So, you know, we really appreciate that in return as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The podcast is definitely not as fun to do after losses. And when they're like this, you know, I was definitely dreading podcasting a little bit, as much as I love it and talking to you, Marnie, of course. I wish we were here under different circumstance, but hey, we are not. So, all right, let's start chatting. I've got a question for you then. How were you feeling before the game? Don't worry about after or anything like that. How did you feel before the game? You tell us, and then I'll tell you how I was feeling.
I felt unreal. I had us winning that game for the last week. Longer. It's pretty much since I left the game Good Friday, right? Because Good Friday was the last game we went to. That was the last game we played in Melbourne at Marvel. I was like, cool, can't wait to be back here playing the Hawks. We're going to win. I'm going on a bender after, and I don't really drink. So this is a big thing for me, right? I'm like, I'm going to go party. This is going to be the best ever. And I rode that all week. I genuinely had it in my mind that we were winning that game. Same way I did for Good Friday, but this was obviously a bit different because both teams going in 0-5. So I was pumped. My Delulu brain was well and truly peaking, and I had us in. I had us winning. I absolutely had no doubt in my mind we were going to win this game.
Yeah. Well, incredibly opposite to how I was feeling. I did tip us, but if for all those who listen to the preview podcast, I've never been so nervous and terrified for a game of football in my life, because I did say, and I think, you know, it is kind of how we all feel now. This is probably the most important game we've played for years, because of, you know, how West Coast have done the last 2 weeks. That definitely makes it so much worse with the Harley Reid story. And should we have lost the game? Should we have not? Makes it feel a bit worse. Hawthorn being as bad as they have been, you know, and us being the only two undefeated teams in a season where we second year under Clarkson. I know there was disruptions, but the expectation, the preseason looked a lot better. I was so nervous because at the moment, I don't feel like North can do anything under adversity or when the pressure's tough or on. I don't trust them at all. So I was very, very worried, but I was still summoning a win. So what was your direct feeling after the game, May? Just your personal, internal, what was going through your head?
I mean, I was upset, obviously. I was really upset. And I think that the main reason why I was so upset after the game, it was obviously the result, because the result stings, but it's just sort of the way we lost. It kind of felt very similar to the way we lost against Hawthorn in that second game last season. That was our worst loss for the year last year, was that second loss against Hawthorn. It played out in a very, very similar manner, I thought. We just, after the 10 minutes into the first quarter, it felt like we didn't really let up much of a yelp after that, which was so disappointing. The other thing that made me really upset yesterday, and it's sort of a point that I got down, but it's kind of all tied in. What really hurt to see was, and I came on this podcast last week, and I've said this so many times that people really need to come to the game. And there was 30,000 people, nearly 31,000 people there yesterday, right? It was an excellent crowd for a 4 o'clock game on a Sunday for two teams who hadn't won a game yet. But near where we were sitting, there was some people who, from this opening bounce until the final siren, just hurled abuse at our players for four straight quarters. And I get it. People are frustrated. People are hurting. And I can, and we're all victim of, you know, letting it slip. We come on this podcast, we've got stuck into players before, you know, we've all let things slip mid-game out of frustration, out of anger at a player who's maybe done something wrong. But there were people sitting in Bay 29 and around Bay 29, where both Josh and I were sitting yesterday, who literally just abused our players from the very start. And that is just it's so unnecessary, and it's really disgusting in my opinion. And I think there's a really big difference, like I said, between you get frustrated, you get caught up in the heat of the moment. Everyone's guilty of it. And I'm not saying that that's right. I'm not saying that's something that's excusable, but these aren't people who have done that. These are people who have made a mistake. These are people who it felt like their intent was to come to the game and just to bash the players on the field for four quarters. And I just think that's really unacceptable. And incredibly enough, that is the emotion that overrode me leaving the ground yesterday. It was, I was really upset about the result. Yep, I was really upset in the way that game was played. But over everything, to have people come there and just rip the players to shreds for the entire duration of the game, I just thought was quite unbelievable, to be honest. And it was really embarrassing and pretty shameful and pretty disgusting. So That for me was actually the lowest point of the day yesterday.
Okay. Yeah, and look, depending on how you do it, we understand, and I understand that that's hurling abuse at players isn't okay. Like, obviously it depends, maybe the channel it's, you know, fed down. But yeah, I think there's two sides to it, because what was said and the more personal attacks on players, not okay. But I also do understand the frustration, and people vent it in different ways. Now, doesn't mean that every way is acceptable. And yeah, personal attacks I think aren't acceptable. But you know, I guess that unfortunately is going to be a byproduct of that sort of performance. But yeah, personal
I
attacks and
get it. Like I
things.
said, I get a comment here and there. Like everyone's guilty of it. I'm guilty of it. I've said things on this podcast, and I've said then that I own what I say. I've said things in the heat of the moment in the game. I own what I say, but I don't go to a game with the intention of sitting there and bad mouthing our players constantly for across 4 quarters. Like I just think it's ridiculous. I think that is so embarrassing, and that is just yeah. I think that's really like the low of the low behavior.
Yeah. So guess I'll explain a little bit how I felt, because I've never felt this way before at a football game. In not even David Noble era, not even last year. And I'll take a few minutes here, Marnie, just to vent a little bit
Floor
about
is yours, Josh. I'm gonna
about
sit
how
back
I
and
feel.
relax.
You sit
Just
back,
wake me
Marnie.
up, yeah? No, I'm
Yeah,
kidding.
absolutely. You take a nap, and I'll text you.
Take the floor, Josh. Take the floor.
I'm gonna say okay, and I feel like I don't want to make you upset, Maya. I feel like I'm gonna say some things that might make you mad, because I know how much you love the club, but I do too. I've said most of
No
this to you
judgment.
before, though, but
So no judgment pod.
no judgment pod.
It's fine. It's fine. But if you never see me again, guys, you know
You know what happened? This is the moment.
why.
The title of the episode is Josh and Marnie broke up. Oh no, highest
Oh,
probably
dear.
highest viewed episode ever.
Oh, God, the
Oh God.
drama.
Oh dear. Okay. I'm just going to be 100% honest. And if people like my take, fantastic. Hopefully it mirrors some people's. If not, I apologize. This is how I feel. Please don't forget I love the club, and this is the way I grieve. I've never been so embarrassed to be a North Melbourne fan as I was yesterday. I was sitting in that bay, as much as I love Bay 29, everyone that was in it. And once again, thank you to everyone who came and said hello. I've never found myself in a bay just staring at the roof, not just almost giving up in a way. And have I given up on the club's future and things? No, I don't mean it like that. But at that time, I've never, ever, ever felt so embarrassed to be a North Melbourne fan. And I'm always going to be proud I'm a North fan. And I always will be, but it was pathetic. I can't believe that happened yesterday. And I think, in my opinion, maybe arguably the darkest day we've had. The way we lost, that we had 10 minutes of good football at the start, and then we got bullied by children. Jai Newcombe did what he wanted on a football field yesterday. We had bigger, more experienced bodies. Our leaders didn't stand up. They didn't look like they cared. They didn't look like they wanted to try. At the moment, it doesn't seem to matter what we do. I just don't feel any sort of connection with most of this team. There's individuals that stick up for North and battle their hearts out every week, but it's the vast, vast minority. And one of the things, especially looking at going through the players who played yesterday, and I sort of was trying to put who the best and the worst were. There wasn't even that many bad players. The majority of the players just were anonymous. Like, and when I say bad, I mean like they negatively affect the team. There was a few, absolutely, and we'll talk about some of those, but I've never seen a group of passengers like this before. And I think it's really sinking into me. And I've felt this way for a while. And I think a lot of the fan base is slowly coming around, because my level of optimism isn't quite as high as yourself, Marnie, which I wish it was, because that looks way more fun. We are so, so bad. And I haven't seen a team this bad in history, in my lifetime, maybe except for the D's, like 10 and 15 years ago. We are so far back from the – that is, we just got beaten by nearly 50 points by the worst team in the league, second worst team in the league. That wasn't a mid-table team. You know, we were closer to the Giants. So what's happened in 5 weeks? It was embarrassing. Like, I don't know. I don't see this improving anytime soon. Do I think the future is still bright? Yes, I do. But that road to happiness with this team has probably doubled in length after yesterday. We don't have any mental resilience. I don't believe they'll bounce back and put in a performance. And some individual moments from some players, even after the game, made me sick to my stomach of how much they don't care. And one of the moments, which I don't want to harp on about, because once again, it's not about bashing any individual players, but Luke Davies-Uniacke, as the siren went, the first thing the camera was on him on the ground, and we looked at these on the big screens. The first thing LDU did was go up to a Hawthorne player, hug him, smile, and start laughing. And that made me sick. It really, really did. There was a very telling moment last week against the Cats where, you know, we obviously got absolutely slaughtered. And the first player that the cameras panned to after the siren was Hugh Greenwood, and he was hands on his hips and looked absolutely dejected. And I know the Hugh Greenwood love on this podcast is real, and I know a lot of people dislike and don't, not Hugh Greenwood, but don't want him to play or don't think he's very good. It's very interesting, and you said this, Maya, to me on the phone before. It's very interesting to me that all we want is apparently effort, heart, desire, pressure, but the first person everyone wants to drop is Hugh Greenwood, who will do that regardless of where we are in the ladder. And you've got guys who are meant to be stars, like LDU, who don't make an impact on a game whatsoever. Their stats look good, and yes, he had little moments here and there. This is Hawthorn. This is a midfield full of infant children. He's 24, 25 years old or something like that. His games last year that he played were elite. He didn't even look like he wanted to stand up. Like, that you look at the numbers on paper, he was fine. He was good. 29 touches or something like that. You know, decent efficiency, no impact. And that was most of our team. And that's what I meant before about how many passengers we have. We have more passengers than good and bad players combined. And that's the real problem. Tom Powell, fantastic year, great young player, really like Tom Powell, and going to be on this team for hopefully years to come. Don't remember a single thing he did. Stats look fine. You know, you could point out so many different midfielders. Zerha, I thought he was playing okay. Then after the game, don't really remember anything he did, to be honest with you. So it's really sinking in where we're at. I highly, highly doubt, and I can't see us doing anything, even competing for finals within the next 4 or 5 years, because the distance between us and Hawthorn is so far. Another draft and trade window is not going to make up for that. You know, Brady Rawlings years ago came out and said, we're building from the midfield out. What an idiotic, incredibly dumbfounded decision that is. And look, I don't work in that field. I'm just a fan. Okay. So at the end of the day, who cares about my opinion? But we all know midfielders can come in from day one and be good. So why have we spent 5 years recruiting midfielders, and now they're all, you know, what are they, like 20 to 24 years old, you know? And now we have no keepers, except for Comben and Larky. There's not a single key position player in this team that I think will last over the next 5 years. Tristan Cherry, you know, he's played very well this season. There's still things with him that I think maybe we're looking over, because he's been a lot better, but maybe him too. Put him in that list, because I think he played decently yesterday in an awful team performance. Where key position players take 3 to 5 years minimum to become good. So what are we going to do? LDU is about to hit his prime. Tom Powell's played 50 now, looking like he's about to start doing something. We've got talents like Wardlaw, and Sheasel is apparently going to go into the midfield a bit more now, Clarkson suggested. So those guys are ready. So who are they kicking to? What are we doing? Is this really the plan? Because it's not working. And it's we're so, so, so far behind the eight ball. Look at what Harley Reid's doing. And I love that we won that last game. And I agree. The media is just going to take whatever narrative they want. If we lost that game, that'd be like the club's in the pits because we tanked. And if we won it, obviously, and now Harley Reid looks unbelievable. And look what the Eagles have done the last 2 weeks. And, you know, now they're going to write stories about we should have lost that game. You know, the only way I'm getting through this is to literally ignore every single bit of media because it will just enrage me. So look, I'll wind this up here really quickly, but overall we're so far behind the pack. We've got so many average AFL players. One of the things that made me really realize how bad we are is I had a few friends with me who are Geelong fans, and they came just to support North for their dislike of Hawthorn, which I appreciate. My friend Zoe is a football nut. She's obsessed, knows the game pretty, watches so much football, and she could not believe what she was seeing. Just no one leading. You know, she was sitting behind me screaming, just lead. We had the ball outside 50. Everyone would stand there and just say, yep, kick it long to the contest. How many times did I sit there and say, this is going long to a contest, and within four or five kicks, it'll be up the other end for a mark. And that happens so many times, you know. Just the lack of skill. She couldn't believe some of the decisions these players were making. And look, Geelong is an elite team over 20 years. She doesn't even know how good she's had it, to be honest. But, you know, it was so interesting to see a neutral, locked-in footy fan's perspective of our club. And I think it really also showed me how atrociously bad we are. And I think it's time to start asking some questions of Clarkson. Not should he have a job or not. I don't want to go down that route because I do think he's the right coach. But some of the tactical decisions, some of the things he's doing, baffled. This is a four-time premiership coach, and to leave that many players open in the forward line, you know, to not change anything up in the midfield, to just seemingly have no answer. Did anything change in that game after the first 10 minutes of the first quarter? No, Hawthorn just ran around and did the same thing every single quarter. Something's going wrong at this club. And I love the changes Clarkson's made. Jen and Sonia and Todd and all those people, I think, are the right people, but man, it's dire. It is so, so dire. And North fans, I hope you guys realize that this is going to be 5 years minimum until we're even challenging for finals, maybe a decade. And I don't think that's overreacting to say. That's genuinely how far back I think we are. Anything within 2 to 3 years, forget it. Genuinely forget that, because we are an abomination. So there's my rant.
I'm gonna take the wheel from you, Josh.
I'm just gonna turn my little light on in front of me here as well. So please excuse that. But
I just want to offer a few comments in response to a few things that Josh has said, because I've obviously seen, you know, plenty of commentary. I've got plenty of friends who go for North, and I speak to so many of you guys on a regular basis. People want to talk about that win against Gold Coast last year, saying, oh, it's like the one win we've won, you know, over a year, and it cost us Harley Reid. There's a few things I just want to talk about. It might have cost us Harley Reid, but that win against Nikolaki, a All-Australian Guernsey, that win probably gets Harry Sheasel his rising star. That win went on to see Harry Sheasel put pen to paper after he won the Rising Star and our Best and Fairest, put pen to paper for a very, very long deal. It's like a 6 year, 7 year deal, right?
Aiden Corr, handball to Kane Turner too.
That was the best moment of all time, right?
I agree with you, by the way. I don't think we should have lost that game, just to preface.
I know. I don't think this is a personnel issue. I think it's a systems issue. I think that this game plan, it's very obvious to me in the 6 weeks that we've played. I know, Josh, you disagree with me on this, but I think North ball is our game style, and it is our game style for the long term. And I know that there's people that you disagree with this, and we've had this discussion before. You think we're too slow and not skilled enough to execute that. I'm going to argue with you on that one, because in the entire six games I have watched, we have played six very good quarters of football. That was the first game against the Giants. That was a pretty good performance from the get-go until the end. And we stuck with, you know, they are the best team in the competition. You know, you could argue between them and Geelong, the two best sides in the competition, right?
Calm.
So we stuck with them. playing North Ball for four quarters. And we came out in that first half against Fremantle in round two and blew them out of the water. And North Ball might not be there yet, but North Ball's what's going to get us there. And now is the time that we need to start really honing in on that game style, and we need to start practicing it.
How
Yeah,
many?
okay, we may.
Sorry, I was just going to
You
ask a really
go.
quick question on that point. How are we going to feel? Because my gut tells me, even though in the long term, even if that does work out, it'll so badly negatively affect our club in the short term, suffering so many losses. Players will leave and.
Well, look at the way we're playing now. We didn't give a yelp after the first 10 minutes of yesterday's game. This game plan is not working. We also have a terrible defense. Our defense is deplorable, and we knew that going into this season. So we can't play. Our team defense is terrible. Our defenders, for the most part, are pretty ordinary. And you just said it
Midfield
yourself,
defense is the worst.
with the exception of Charlie Convin, you don't think any of those defenders are going to be there in the next 5 years, right?
No, maybe Callum
So
Dawson, maybe.
Our team defense is terrible. Our defenders are pretty lackluster.
Mediocre.
And while Griffin Logue is on the sidelines, we just have to kind of keep on keeping on. So why would we play a game style that doesn't actually benefit us in any way, shape, or form? It doesn't. If we go high on the attack, we were scoring. We scored against Fremantle. We scored against the Giants. We even scored a bit against Carlton. When we play, because we had periods of that game where we sort of employed the North Ball thing as well, right? So what are we doing? Like, we already know what works for us. Think back to that practice game against St Kilda. I get it was just a practice game, but think about how exciting and how good we looked when we played that kind of style. Now, yeah, it's going to hurt us in the short term, but we're hurting in the short term anyway. I mean, you just said it yourself. Yesterday was the worst game you've ever seen us play, and we didn't play North Ball. So why wouldn't we play something that we know we can do, and we know that we've actually got half a chance at challenging some opposition when we play it? I think it's our system that's a problem. Richmond, when they won their three-peat, had a very solid system that any random player could set. I mean, bloody Jake Arts came into that side and was a superstar. Because you make all these average players look good, not because they're good players, because they've got a system that works. So we have a system. We've actually figured out a system that works. I don't know why we're not playing to that system.
I think because it
28, you
works
know what I
so,
mean?
I understand what you mean. I don't disagree. I feel like
Sorry,
when
I'm also turning the lamp on. I'm also
I
turning
might
the
have to
lamp
turn
on.
my bedroom light on in a second too because it's getting dark. I don't disagree with playing North Ball. I am very critical of it though, and I think the way we played against Geelong, I feel like is. I want to come. I want to. I don't want to stop North Ball. I want to slow North Ball. I want to halve North Ball. I don't think we should play North Ball until we're in the first top half of the ground. If we win a center clearance, North Ball the shit out of it. But getting out of defense, the one thing I would say is like a slightly more controlled game plan. I feel like can help us progress up the field more. We have to just get one overlap handball and then play North Ball. That's the way I
But
kind of
the
feel.
chaos works given where our skills are. And I know that's a bit of a grim
I
reality,
don't
but
disagree with that. I think that,
I
like,
also think that in the last 6 weeks, we've learned that we struggle to make adjustments to the way we're playing in the middle of a quarter. The team still is unable, like when Fremantle started to take control at the end of the, in the last 10 minutes of the second quarter against us, right? That's when Freo sort of started to get on top. We actually couldn't stop the bleeding. And we've had periods where we can't stop the bleeding, and we
that was the
actually
second
need
quarter
that re
yesterday.
yeah. So we need to actually reset before we can go and regroup before we can go again. So I don't think this side yet has the ability to do that. So while we don't have the ability to do that, we've got to pinpoint what we've got to commit to something that, and we know it works because we've seen it a few times now before, and it's the best we've looked and it's the best we've felt about where our football's going so far this season, and commit to it. That's the first thing I want to say. And I want to leave that. I'm done with talking about that. The
Yes,
second
thank
thing I
you.
want to talk about, is West Coast, right?
You talk about this. I'm just going to turn my bedroom light on quickly.
West Coast is really far away. Perth is very, very far away from the rest of civilization here in Australia, okay? And I've lived there, so I can speak from experience. It's very much a bubble. And a lot of people, what they don't realize is that West Coast is one of the biggest clubs in the league, whether people want to admit to it or not. They're wealthy. They've got good infrastructure. They've got money in the bank. They've got good culture. They get crowds every single week. I mean, when they're losing, they're getting 30,000 people there week in, week out. Now the crowds, they're up and about. So it's going to be easier for West Coast to turn things around quicker than it is for us to do that. And I know that on field our performance has looked very similar, but you can't forget West Coast won a flag like 6 years ago. And I think that their ability to rebuild is going to be a lot easier and it's going to be a lot quicker than what we're going to be able to do. So I'm really sick of the comparisons with West Coast internally, anyway. I get it. It's frustrating. Harley Reid was always going to be a superstar, and we knew that. And while I don't doubt that he could have provided us with some inspiration, some motivation, it almost feels like he single-handedly turned this club, West Coast around. And I don't doubt that he's had a big impact at West Coast. We knew that's what was going to happen, regardless where he was going to go. But we've got plenty of young talent. I mean, I personally wouldn't want to trade Harry. I'm not. I wouldn't want to trade Harry Sheezel. I love
No.
Harry and I love what he's been able to do for this club. The excitement when George Wardlaw steps on the field. Colby McKercher showed incredible signs yesterday. There were some really, really nice things that he did. So I just think that comparison is the thief of joy. And we don't even have much joy at the moment down at Arden Street. And I just don't think that these comparisons are going to do us any additional favors.
It's hard not to compare, though, I think. Like, I agree with you completely on that.
Of course,
I agree with
I
you
get
that.
it. It's what we do. It's what we do. It's the nature of the beast. It's the nature of the 24/7 media cycle and social media and all these things playing a part, right? But at the end of the day, and this is the last thing I'm going to say that I'm wrapping this portion up, we won that game against Gold Coast, right? It had this flow-on effect of, all these great things happened for us, with accolades and stuff like that as the season goes on. We look at players like LDU and Cam Zouha. I'll use those two as an example. They've been spoken about a lot. Do you think someone like Harley Reid is going to be the reason why Cam Zouha and LDU are motivated to get on that field week in, week out? Do you think that Harley Reid is going to be the reason why they're motivated to put on the jumper every single week? No, it's not. The wins are what's going to motivate these players every week. The wins are what's going to keep these players at North, and the wins are what's going to see us progress up the ladder. I don't doubt that a player can have a massive impact for us and, can really help turn things around, of course. But we've got to start winning. It's a winning culture that's going to turn things around for us. It's being able to learn how to win again and find that winning culture. That's what's going to move us up the ladder. That's what's going to progress this club forward. And eventually, we'll play finals and, hopefully win our fifth premiership. I'm over it. Like I'm really over it. Like what's done is done. We won that game. It's the best, personally, it's the best, one of the best feelings I've had for a very, very long time supporting North, because at the end of the day, footy is a winning business. You don't support your club to see them lose to get a draft pick. You see, you've. I didn't turn up yesterday, to see us play terribly. I came because I wanted us to win, and I think that's what people need to kind of take a step back and realize is that that's what we should really be focusing on.
I
It's a
don't
team
know.
sport, and
Sorry, go.
it's a team sport. It's a strong structure and it's a strong culture. And I have no doubt that there's individuals that can really contribute to this and to building the club back up to where we want it to be. But I wouldn't doubt what we've got there at the moment. There are some very special players in there. There are some very special personalities in there that can really implement and can really impact the club. So that's what I want to say in response to a few things you said, Josh. That's kind of where I'm sitting and sort of thinking about things from at the moment. I think, yeah, it's definitely, I don't, I think it's a team thing. And I think it's something that I personally believe that we will still be able to get there. It's just going to take a bit of time. And I think patience is key.
Yeah, I agree with you about like the culture thing. I think culturally, do they have fun at the club? Yeah. Does everyone friends? Yep. Does the training staff go out and make good relationships and things with people? Yep. I just don't know how we turn the losing culture around. If I was LDU or Zouha, as much as we've talked about them to sort of call them out a little bit, I don't blame them for not really having like the belief. Because why would they? What has the club done to give them belief? It's partly on them and it's partly on, your David Noble eras and your Reece Shaw eras and the management and things like that. But, you know, I don't see where, and we will win games this season. I don't know where. I would be shocked if we went winless, but I don't see where our win comes from. I wouldn't be tipping us in any game for the rest of the year. I think that's idiotic to even think to tip us. And if you want to tip off heart and love for the club, go for it. Like 100%. But I don't see it, and it's not my job. So I guess that's probably why I don't see it, but I don't see how we turn it around from here. We'll turn and it will. I'm not saying it won't, but I don't know how that happens anymore. And, you know, we've got a couple of minutes here before we throw to some voice messages. So I'll just say this one thing and wrap it up. Clarkson needs to face this head on a lot more. He might be trying to play his cards close to his chest because of the media and the onslaught that they are waiting to put on us. At the end of the day, I don't feel like as a fan we've got much communication on where we're at. I don't know what he thinks. I don't know. I said this a few weeks ago. Is this part of the plan? Did he think we were this bad? Does he know? Or is he now going, oh, shit, we're awful? I would love to know if he thinks we're on track or not. There's no way he can give us that information without the media running with that and like dragging our club through the coals. But I'm really concerned the lack of communication. You can play the same press conference every week from Clarkson. And not that I think he's doing that once again because of the media and how badly they'll treat him if he says anything else. But as a fan base, we deserve more communication than this. We can't be expected to just trust and believe, turn up, pay money, all that sort of stuff when we get that. It's not a value for money at all. It's not a value for time and effort at the moment. And, you know, I hope people still turn up, and I hope people always watch the games and support and that sort of stuff. But I don't blame anyone for finding it harder and harder and harder every single week. So it will turn. But like I said, I don't really know when that is. And I would really like a little bit more communication and not just the same bland press conferences. I want to know where we're at. I want to know how we're going to fix it. I want to see things change. And I want some actual action and proactiveness to this, because every single week I feel like we've got worse this year. You know what I mean? Like the Giants is probably the one we hold our heads up for the most. Fremantle were like, yeah. Carlton were like, oh. Then Brisbane were like, oh God. Geelong were like, oh my God. And Hawthorn we were like, holy shit, God, no. So, you know, I think... yeah, a lot of things I could say, but I think I just want, I want to know that this is where we're expected to be. Is this something that he thought, or is this something that he didn't? Because it feels like this is something that he was like, oh my God, I can't believe this is it. But
look, I didn't want to believe it, but I'm starting to feel like the onslaught and the draw that we had to start the season maybe has played on our confidence a lot more than I was willing to.
Why would they believe? That's what I'm saying before. Why would they believe in that? So look, we're going to throw to voice messages quickly and then we're going to come back and we're going to keep chatting about some specific notes we've got and little things we want to touch on. So thank you guys for listening to that deep emotional first half of the pod. Enjoy all of your voice messages that you've kindly sent in. Furthernorthpod@gmail.com, of course, as you know. And look, let's see what these voice messages say, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
Aiden Core has no cause. You heard it first from Kane Corns. 700K down the drain. Aiden Core lets them score again. Score again. Score again. Aiden Core lets them score again.
Physically, I don't think we're there. Mentally, I don't think we're there. And it's doing my fucking head in.
One word for that. Embarrassing. It was even harder listening to the Hawthorn fans gloat. Where do we go from here?
Look, it's a hard one. We look scared. We're just bombing it forward, and we need another target other than Larky.
Our midfield needs to kick up the fucking ass. They need a rocket. There's something going on there.
Rock bottom, 5 years into a rebuild. What young key position players do we have to build around? Clarko wants Sheezel down back until he consolidates his spot there. That happened round two last year. What are we waiting for? I'm over it.
I can't keep doing this. The players give no effort. The only player that gives a shit is Sheezel.
Zerha was made to look like a traffic cone when Weddle went around him for the 15th score review in a row. It's a joke. You won't see me out of game for the rest of the year. I'm sorry.
Hey, Josh. Hey, Marnie. I'm going to go drive myself off the Westgate Bridge after that performance today. Absolutely embarrassing.
All right, so let's bring your mouth guards to training. Play the kids. Hard man-on-man footy, shinbone spirit, turn up every week. Let the wins eventuate.
Hi, we're back. Thank you so much again to everyone who sent in those voice memos.
Yes.
We hope you feel a little bit better getting all of that off your chest, no doubt. Mm.
Exactly. This podcast is just like us sending a very long voice memo to the world. So I'm glad you guys could be a part of it. Every week, please send them in. The crazier, the better. The funnier, the better. You too can be part of bringing some hope and joy to the team as well. So it doesn't always have to be rants. Tell us why I'm too negative and Marnie's super positive and always correct, because she would love to hear that. And sometimes I need someone to make me a little bit happy. Okay. Let's get back to business, Marnie. This is serious. Let's
do it. About
what we need to change. In our opinions, what are some things that we need to change? Now, I've got a few notes here and I can rattle these off and you can respond and then we'll do a few of yours after that. Does that sound fair?
Okay. That sounds good to me.
So the first one for me is, in Alistair Clarkson's press conference, he did say that the plan for Sheasel was to play off halfback for the first half of the year. And then the second half of the year, we're going to try moving to the midfield. But now,
getting forward that, now.
Well, that's getting what he said. Now we might have to accelerate that and fast track that. So
100%.
That is something. Now, do I think that will fix the core of the problem? Not an Aiden Core joke there. No, I do not. Will it make us go better, better entry into the forward line and ball movement? Yes, but it still doesn't fix our problem of getting the ball. Now, another one I've got here, Dersma, he needs to go back to the twos and get a little bit of confidence. You know, the kid is exciting. I'm not saying he's done anything wrong. He's only played six games ever, but he's really failed to make an impact for minimum 4 weeks now. And I just think he needs to go back, get the confidence, kick bags in the VFL, and then come back into this team, because he's a long-term part of this club and he's just not doing anything at the moment, which I think is mainly because he's, one, playing in a horrendous team that can't get him the ball, and two, he's a child. So the thing I find interesting with Dersma is that he is I only ever see him pop up on the wing and half back trying to take a specky. I never see him in the forward line. I never see him get a touch in the forward line. And I guess he needs to push back to even be able to get involved in the play, which is a system thing. But what do you think about that, mate? Do you think it's probably the right call?
Yeah. I want to wait and see what happens with Eddie Ford this week. Disagree with you.
Just for the
but I think... I think so. I think there's a player who I want to see come into the side who could probably take his spot as well. I think that, and I'm at Braden George, I'll just say it. I think Braden George is probably time to, if his body is ready.
Has
to,
he been playing
to
forward though in the VFL? Because most times I've seen he's sort of playing off half back. Like,
everyone's playing off half back at the moment.
This is what I'm about to say. Like, what is, like, if we just got 20, we apparently do, because we can't do anything in the forward half of the ball. We apparently have 22 half backs playing every week. We've got this kid, who is meant to be a gun and played all his career. Not everyone's going to work out like a Sheasel. Like, what are we doing? It baffles me. I agree with Brandon George would be exciting, and I think he's playing okay, but what are we doing with,
potentially playing them off the half back line, teaching them how to defend potentially and getting a little bit of a defensive game in them, because our tackling inside our forward 50 is pretty horrendous. That's one big, and it doesn't go in there that often. Mm-hmm. And a lot of time it's just taken uncontestedly by an opposition player and just an easy set mark. But when the ball does come to ground, there's very few tacklers in there. There's very few players sort of crumbing. So potentially maybe Braden George comes in, or maybe Braden George comes in, he goes back, maybe throw Fisher forward, give him a run up forward, different.
Do anything.
Maybe bring Stevenson back in, potentially. I don't know.
I think there's merit
and there's enough players in the VFL that we could replace Dersma if we wanted to give him a little spell in the VFL. However, Eddie Ford injured himself yesterday, hurt his hip. I don't know if they just subbed him out of precaution. He started the game really well as well, and
The
he and
Clarko press
Curtis.
conference did suggest he's fine. It's just a bit sore.
Yeah, so he and Curtis have probably been our two most consistent performers, I would say, across the year so far. Obviously, Eddie Ford hasn't played, every game starting, but I think they've probably been two of our best players this year so far. And so, yeah, maybe see how he goes. But I do agree with you. It's not a knock on Durs. I'd love Dersma,
Yeah, no, it's not
but I
enough.
just think maybe just a few weeks in the VFL will do him some good.
Something I talked about on the preview podcast and the selection, I posted this up on Instagram too, and people seem to not agree with me. Dropping Wardlaw and Greenwood, I think, was a shambles this week, and I'm really strong on this. And lots of people messaged me. This is the thing I talked about with people the most over the last few days. Do I agree Wardlaw looked banged up and wasn't contributing? Yes. Do not drop one, your sort of, do not drop your most talented midfielder and Hugh Greenwood, your most experienced hard nut, thing that tackle machine, the thing that we are missing so much. Yes, he maybe hadn't had the best game against Geelong. He played all right the week before. Don't drop those guys before you play the team on the bottom of the ladder with you. Drop them the next week when we're playing a game we probably aren't going to win. Like rest them next week or drop someone the week after. This game was way too crucial. I liked the inclusion of Will Phil. I thought he played okay. I didn't expect him to do anything crazy because he hasn't played all season. So, that really baffled me. And I think there's a, this is the sort of stuff that makes me question what Clarkson's thinking and doing, because I just don't understand why you drop a guy like Hugh Greenwood, who I know people are so divided on, but he tackles so hard and he'll put his head over the ball. He'll get the ball out. He should be playing in the center bounces and backing up in the ruck. I don't think he's great forward, but Wardlaw as well can, you've said it many times, Marnie, he's the barometer. He's the guy who, if he's on, can change us. And we needed a bit of that yesterday and we didn't have it. So I think that was a shambolic dropping and resting against Hawthorn, not against that team. So, they should both come back in. Looking at the VFL stats, Shields and Greenwood had 22 tackles between the both of them. I think Shields had 10 and Greenwood had 12 tackles. I understand it's the VFL, but the next best player on the VFL had three. That just shows the level of intent they have. And,
The intensity.
as much as I kind of don't want to see Liam Shields playing for this team just because of age profile and what he can, he's obviously on the decline. We need leadership so bad because Simpkin's not doing it. I thought McDonald was fine. Like, he was there. I don't think he was bad. I thought Simpkin was bad. And I'm really concerned about him. What's his name? McDonald, Greenwood, McDonald. Just kind of there. Bailey Scott being a leader, don't get it. And Core being a leader, that was always going to go one way. I'll hand this over to you because I'm ranting again. But let me know, like, what did you think of those two droppings, and what do you think about our midfield as a whole, and the leadership in the guts?
So the Wardlaw thing I thought was really interesting. Wardlaw was managed when he was omitted out of the side on when the team was released and when they finalized the team on Friday. But he was the emergency yesterday,
Yes,
which I
yes,
find a bit
yes.
strange. Like if we need to manage George Wardlaw's body, he's probably still in this fragile spot. He's definitely there's been so many soft tissue injuries to start the year across the whole competition that he's sort of the last person we can really afford to lose to injury. I've got no issue managing him the way we think we need to. And if his body genuinely needs a rest, go for it. No big deal. But then why was he the emergency? That really baffled me. I was really confused on that one. Everyone knows how I feel about Hugh Greenwood. Like a broken record. Everyone's so sick of me talking about it. But, I don't really get the knock on playing senior, like veterans. I think that both Shields, I would bring both Shields and Greenwood in, to be
I
honest.
think I might too, yeah.
And I don't really care if people want to have a go at me about this. But, both Shields and Greenwood, less so Greenwood, but Shields knows what it takes to play in a successful side. He's a premiership player. Hugh Greenwood was at Adelaide, in 2017, But prior to him playing in the AFL, he played at, high level basketball and he was incredibly successful. He knows what it takes to get there. Aiden Corr, I know that we've been pretty divided on where he's been sitting this season. I thought yesterday was his best performance of the year. He definitely did have a couple of stuff ups, but he also did a lot of really nice things. He's also played in the grand final, albeit that was at the hands of, Richmond shellacking, and I get it. But these guys know what it takes. And we've got people who we have spoken a few times now this year about the lack of leadership. And I think Nick Larkey is our only strong leader currently in the
100%.
side, but he's carrying the entire forward line on his shoulders and he's expected to be a leader because unfortunately our co-captains, while I don't think McDonald's been terrible the last fortnight, hasn't really set the world on fire. And Jai Simpkin, I'm not really sure what's going on there either. So people want leadership. And the people that are screaming for leadership are the same people that are shooting down Greenwood and
Veterans.
Shields when they're named. Both of them know what it takes. We've got a side. We've talked about our defense. Our team defense is a shambles, but these two guys are, Q Greenwood leads our tackle. He's led our tackles the past couple of weeks when he's been in the side. And it just what frustrates me. And I'm gonna get off. I'll get off the Hugh Greenwood thing because people are so sick of me talking about it. But it just seems like there's different rules for different players. There's
I
plenty of
agree.
players who have played six games this year and have put plenty of feet wrong. And I get it's probably a bit of a personnel issue, but I just don't think Greenwood deserved to be dropped. I
No,
just think
I
that,
agree.
he offers so much. And the proof is in the pudding. Nick Larkey had to go into the center and ruck yesterday. What Nick Larkey should never be taking any ruck contest unless we're in the forward 50. He should never leave the forward 50 to go and take a center bounce, but he did yesterday. Like that is ridiculous. That should never happen in a million years. So if that's what great if Sherry can't ruck a full game and we don't have a second player to step in and take that role, then Greenwood needs to play.
This is a good segue as well. I agree with you, and I'm not the Greenwood stan that you are, but I do agree with you on this, and I back Hugh Greenwood as well, just because we're not saying Hugh Greenwood's going to come in and be our best midfielder. We're not saying that Shields and Greenwood are going to be our best players, but if you guys want leadership and
They'll set the
hard
standard that we
tackling
just
set
don't have
standard
right
setters,
now.
I agree. They're the two kind of best we're going to have. Like Hugh Greenwood would bring more. I actually thought Dylan Stevens was okay yesterday. I think that might have been his best game, even though it still is probably a little bit underwhelming. But that being said, it's probably his best game. Is Shields going to be like, can't he offer some more? Like Darcy Tucker, I know he was sort of played okay the last couple of weeks, but once again, do we want just like a medium mid player, or do we want someone who can bring some leadership? And sometimes with where we're at, we should have players, Hugh Greenwood, Liam Shields age that are good, but we don't. So at the moment we can have two things. You can play young kids who might turn out to be something, but could be really, really bad. Or you can play some veterans to actually bring some leadership. And yeah, they won't inspire you with their skills on the field, but they will bring something else that we are really desperately lacking. That's toughness, leadership, and effort and intent. And we don't have any of that. So the point I was going to bring up after this was the ruck. I thought Biggie Nguyen was horrendous yesterday. That is the worst. Well, obviously, he's played two games. Obviously, I thought he was okay last week. I like Biggie. I've spoken positively about him, even in the preseason, was saying he should start over Pink and those guys. He was woeful. The first six goals in the first half, six open marks inside 50. He was the one who was meant to be on those players. He's lagging behind his player. He wasn't jumping into contest. He wasn't spoiling. He wasn't manning up. He was really, 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 really poor. So he was our worst defender by a mile and worst on the whole field. Throw him into the ruck. The dude can jump through a building. Like throw him into
Change
the
it up
ruck
a little
instead of
bit.
Nick Larkey. Having that being said, throwing Comyn forward, a lot of people got excited. I hate seeing that. Clearly, because that means we're in such a shambles. We have to do something so drastic that it throws off everything we've trained for. Comyn didn't do a single thing in the forward line. I love Chum. He's been, and I thought he's our best defender. He is. He's one of the guys who I see in the leadership group in the future. He's one of the guys that I see, being a pillar down back for us for years to come. But Don't go away from, get Biggie to jump in the ruck and then get him to run forward. He can take a mark. He might be woeful in front of goal, but so half the players are anyway. Like, I really hated seeing Comben go forward, and I really hated seeing Larky in the ruck. And I think there's other ways to do it. And once again, I'm not a coach. I'm not Alistair Clarkson. Like, I don't want to be the guy who's like, you should have done this, Clarko. Or, by the way, I haven't won a premiership and you have. But everyone knows what I mean. Like, it really, really baffled me.
It's just an opinion. We watch the club closely because we care. It comes back to that same thing. And, you know, it's just an opinion, and it's just, there's nothing wrong with having an opinion.
Anyone watching that game, including the coaches, should be able to see that Biggie was atrocious. Like, he was limping at one point. You know, you've got to be better if you're on an AFL field regardless of injury. If you're injured, take yourself off, mate. But, you know, he was slow, and he's an explosive, quick, agile springboard of a player who looked really good last week. And he just, it was like Jekyll and Hyde from one week to another. So mix something up, and throwing our best intercept and best one-on-one and just best defender as a whole, who's played three games of defense, that's sad to say, throwing him forward just didn't do anything. If anything, it just, the forward line was as irrelevant as it always had been and made our defense weaker.
Unfortunately, it took him out of the game because we were struggling to get the ball forward anyway.
Comben took three intercept marks in the first quarter. I think he battled super hard all day. You know, he got beaten in a couple of contests, but, you know, still, he's probably our best defender. So I just really didn't like when the shuffle came from Clarkson. I really disliked sort of what it did, and it didn't really do anything. I think it's good he's trying to change things, but I would maybe expect more effect on the game from a yesterday. Four-time premiership coach.
Pretty dire, and I'm glad that he did make that shift. I think you've got to try something, but I think that Charlie Comben is trying to establish himself now as a defender. I just think disrupting that probably isn't beneficial for his development in the long term. Speaking of the defense, I think the Bailey Scott in defense experiment needs to end. I think Bailey Scott needs to come back to the wing. That's where he plays his best football. His run is very damaging, and unfortunately, that's his best asset. And there's a passage of play where he started with the ball in the back line, and he just ran. He ran the full length of the field, and I think he got the ball later on in that chain. You have to give this guy freedom to run. And I think you've got to give him license to actually do what he does best. And I think the wing role can be really impactful when it's used and, efficiently. I had him penciled in as an All-Australian this year in the squad of 40.
He was third in our best and fairest last year. Like, how does someone go from that to playing in the back line?
I think is his trajectory. I think that's actually what he can do. The other thing I would do, I know you said that you thought Dylan Stevens was I think Dylan Stevens probably needs to go back to the VFL as well.
I don't disagree with that as well. I think he's built, like, the last couple of games, he got about 70-80 touches yesterday. You know, I actually think he's one of our better ball users, though. And this is the thing, like, my main criticism on him is he doesn't get around the ball enough. Like, he's been around the ball a little bit more, and he's actually been one of the better players kicking it inside our 50. He just is nowhere to be seen a lot of the time. So I don't disagree. Like, if they dropped him, I wouldn't be like, what? That's wild. I don't think he's been amazing, but, you know, there's plenty more droppable players before
Josh, let me give my wild suggestion.
Okay, do it, Marnie. I'm super ready.
45 minutes to tell everyone that I think we need to play Curtis Taylor.
Oh, my God. we're saved, ladies and gentlemen.
That was no surprise to you because I've told you this 3 times in the last 24 hours.
But the reaction was good because I knew it was coming and I still acted like I didn't know.
I think it's Curtis Taylor time. Curtis Taylor is a player that has superstar potential. People are going to think I'm batshit crazy.
Oh my God, Marnie, no.
The guys don't already think that, right? Curtis Taylor has factor. Curtis Taylor can lock down players. Curtis Taylor, there's a thumbs up. Even Zoom
wants Curtis Taylor to play.
Curtis Taylor does have the ability, to lock players down. He has the ability. He's got a really, really great set of hands. He's pretty good possession, and he's also a good shot on goal. Why not? He played a few games at the end of last year that basically saved his career. I think it's worth a try. I think Curtis, he's played on a wing before, and he actually played not bad on the wing. No one else is really offering much. Darcy Tucker's not having a negative impact, as you would say, on the game. Dylan Stephens is having a negative impact on the game. But Bailey Scott on one wing, Curtis Taylor on the other. I reckon that's a winning combination. Clarko, okay. If you're listening.
Let me respond.
Nailed it. I've nailed it.
I think Curtis Taylor having superstar potential is probably one of the sentence that's made me shrivel up more than anything else in my life. I think
the key word is potential.
I don't think so, Marnie. Look, do I agree with you that we should just give it a go? Yeah, sure. Like, we're so bad, who cares? But
this is never going to happen. But you know what? I'm just throwing it out there. Okay?
It might
just
happen.
Throwing
it
out into the universe.
But it's just going to do nothing for us. Like, you know.
You don't know that. You don't know that.
I've seen him play. I've seen him play many times. He started last year, you know, as one of these players who were like, yeah, he could really have a good year, and he just slowly fell away. You know, Steelan Stevens has way more potential than Curtis Taylor does. Would Curtis Taylor offer more in the short term? Possibly. But, you know, I feel better about sticking with Dylan Stevens, who I do think has, once again, I'm not saying he's been good, but that's most of the team. I think he's built a couple of pretty solid games after having some stinkers at the start. And I rate his disposal, Dylan Stephens. I would feel better about dropping Tucker, even though Tucker maybe has been a little bit better, but Tucker's not going to get better as a player. I don't think Curtis Taylor's going to get better as a player, you know. But look, I don't disagree with you to mix it up a little bit. I just don't think he's got much to offer or much potential room to grow. But
thing I would do is I would keep Will Phillip aside. And I think there's been a lot of divide about Will Phillips. He didn't have a lot of the ball yesterday, but every time he had the ball in hands, his possession is so clean. And I think I think Will Phil's very much a confidence player. And I think that he is definitely someone that when he starts getting a string of games together, he really starts to feel comfortable and he really starts to shine. And I think that keeping him in the side is beneficial long-term for us and for him. I also feel bad for Will Phil. I just want to say one thing. I think Will Phil is very much, and I think that I don't think he probably doesn't take his opportunities as well as he should. And that is a knock on him. That's something he's going to work on. And maybe that comes hand in hand being a confidence player. I don't know how he manages that because he clearly is someone.
Confidence in this team as well is going to be beyond me, but.
Well, he's also obviously someone that, you know, he's basically first on the chopping block, like one foot wrong and he's gone. But I kind of feel like Will Phil is a little bit. Oh, Josh got the disco lights going.
Sorry, I'm fixing my light here. It's all over the place. Please, if you're on YouTube and you follow on YouTube, you're going to get to see some really cool disco lights just then.
Yeah,
if
weird
not,
shit
I was hoping
today.
Marty might squeeze past that and not say anything for the podcast.
No, I had to mention it. Will Phil, I think, is a victim. I think it's a victim of being picked at number three. I've got to be completely honest with you. There's always going to be this discussion about, oh, North took Will Phil at pick three, and then Logan McDonald went to pick four, and it's so baffling. That's got nothing to do with Will Phil. That's the recruitment team. And that's, you know, that is just what happened to him. He can't control that. He was taken at pick three. North clearly saw something in him. There's obviously a talent. There's definitely leadership qualities in there, which we don't have. And so Will Phil can't do anything about going at pick three. It is what it is.
What's
right?
done is done now, but he's got to have a consistent run of games, and if he's given the
they
consistent
just need
run
to figure,
and doesn't
they,
perform,
they just,
then it is what it is.
Well, they just need to figure out what he want, what they're going to do with him at the end of the year. Brad was on the preview podcast. He said he didn't think Will Phil was going to be there at the end of the year. At the moment, I tend to agree with him, but I don't think that we should throw him away so easily. I just think that we don't have a lot of players that have skill, and he has natural skill. So we need to find a way to get that out. We need to get that out of him.
Yeah.
92% disposal efficiency in a team that literally turns the ball over every 2 to 3 kicks. I mean, it's insane. Yeah. So that is my piece on Will Phil. And I think we need to be patient. We're patient with LDU. We've got to be patient with Will Phil.
Yeah, no, I agree. Some things, one point I'm going to make about the midfield as well. Tristan Sherry, I thought he had a good game, and he's had a good season. The fact he's won the most center clearances for us for the year is the problem. Ruckman, he's never going to win. And this isn't his fault. He's not going to win a clean center bounce. He's not going to win and run away from a pack like Goldstein used to.
He's just grabbing it out. He's just going to grab it and hack the ball.
A clearance could be throwing the ball over your head and handballing it, or running away uncontested. That's still a clearance. A clearance is a clearance. So here's the fact that he's getting the center clearances shows how poor the midfield has been for us all year. The names on paper look good, but the midfield's not working. There needs to be massive change, like we've said before. Jerry needs to be better at tapping to the advantage and reading the midfielders, but the midfielders have to be better at reacting to what he does. You know, he's always trying most tackles again, I think, for the game. And one of the highest tacklers in the AFL, which is great.
He was one of the highest rated players this round.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, he's having a good year. I'd still like him to be better at typical Ruckman things, like content. And he took a couple of decent marks. And like I said, this isn't a criticism on him. I think he's had a good year, but, the fact that he's winning the most clearances consistently every game is a glaring, glaring problem when you've got guys like LDU in there who are meant to be A-graders or A-grade potential.
Yeah, definitely.
So a complete defensive and midfield overhaul is sort of what I've thrown up here. Like Phillips, Zerha, Schiesel, McKercher, more time in the centre bounces, I think, is a must. Greenwood, obviously, you know, for that grunt. Archer, Bergman, Hardiman, it's time. It's time to put someone else down there. I'm sick of, like, Zach Fisher's done nothing. I've been really underwhelmed with him. I think I've tried to make some excuses saying, no, he's sort of doing okay. Really? I mean, he's been pretty poor. He's not a decision maker. Harry Shears is the only decision maker in that back line that can accurately dispose of the ball. And we need him in the middle, in the forward line and in the back line. Archer's going to bring grit, toughness, tackling, pressure.
I think Archer's sort of been knocking down that door. I think he's just about ready. I'd be surprised if we don't see him in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
I think
weeks.
Bergman, as he showed last year, is a great disposal of the ball. He was consistently in the 90% disposal efficiencies and seemed like he had a pretty cool head on him. I think it's time to give him a go. We need a bigger back line. We can't keep having McKercher's, Fisher's, Scott's down there. Bailey Scott's an awful, awful defender and doesn't offer anything going out of the defense. He kicked another one out in the full, more turnovers, not as bad as the last 2 weeks. He was better, but the bar was set very, very low. Fisher needs to go to the winger in the forward line, 100%. I'm sick of him off the back line. Once again, not necessarily net negative, but just anonymous sort of down there. I barely remember anything he does in any games. So all these guys who are trying to play North, this is what I kind of meant before as well. Like all these guys who are trying to play North ball from the back line, they need to all be moved forward. We need some solid ball users and decision makers. I'm fine to progress the ball out of the back line slowly. And then as soon as we get one overlap, when we push towards the wing, it's North ball time, and then get Fishers, McKercher's, all these Bailey Scott's overlapping running, and we get that ball into the forward line as quick as possible. So these are players that I think, I don't even really know. Hardiman, haven't heard much about him in the VFL. I've watched some of the games and he's okay. He's been fine. But once again, like the Curtis Taylor bombshell you dropped before, I think Hardiman, Bergman, Archer, it's time. We need a complete. That was the worst our defense has played all season yesterday, and we need to swing the axe. Do I trust Clarkson to swing the axe? Hell no, I don't. There'll be two changes.
I think in theory, making 6-7 changes after a game that we just played it seems like it's something that needs to happen. I don't disagree that changes need to happen, but I also would be too hesitant to make too many changes to a side that's already trying to learn how to play with one another. I've said this a few times so far this year, you know, this is still a side where majority of them are new faces, be it the new recruits have come in from other clubs. So, and then, you know, the bits and pieces that remain, the bones that remain are still trying to, you know, learn how to all play together. I think change needs to come, and I think that Clarko needs to identify, injuries and suspensions aside, there's no suspensions, so any injuries aside, look firstly if anyone's available to come back from injury. I think Cal Dawson's still a couple of weeks away, unfortunately, but look if there's anyone ready to come back from injury that we would have as a lock in our 23, and then assess and see what area, I mean, all areas of the ground need need a makeover and an overhaul. And I'm not saying they don't.
Our forward line's weirdly the best thing. And I'm still underwhelmed with that. I think like when you look across every line of the ground, I think Larky, that was his best game. Larky's still kicking goals, even though he hasn't been himself. Paul Curtis and Eddie Ford have been great, especially Ford. Paul Curtis. You know, the forward line's got the most people performing.
The forward line looks good, but the two problems with the forward line is, first of all, it barely goes down there, and second of all, when it does go down there, half the time the ball's butchered in there.
Why are there balloons on your screen, Marnie? Zoom's doing some weird things.
Zoom really agrees with what it's trying to keep the mood light in here. Okay. I think changes need to come, but I think we just need to be clever with those changes that we make and how many we make at one time.
One more point before we go into maybe Sean Attlee Club Champ votes, and we'll just reel off some names who I thought were best and worst on the ground. Zach Fisher got a free kick behind play in the third or fourth quarter, sort of in front of where we were sitting in the back pocket. He got hit behind play. Do I think it was a bit soft and he dived a little bit? Absolutely. But he got a free kick for that. Not a single player ran up and pushed the guy who hit him and stood up for him. Not a single player. And this has been highlighted before for like Coleman Jones when he got injured. Not really many people ran up to him and asked if he was okay. I don't want to believe that, you know, I know all the word out of the club is, oh, we're all close mates, we're all this, we're all that.
It feels like there's 23 individuals that take the field each week. And that comes back to the team structure being weak as well.
Yeah, if they don't show that stuff on the field, then in the press conferences when they say the club culture is good, I don't believe you, basically. Zach Fisher got that ball, got a free kick, and everyone just went, oh, okay, whatever. Go back and scruff the guy and push him, or at least pretend to stand up for somebody. So culturally, you know, things have never looked worse, I don't think. Maybe on the field.
What's interesting about that is that usually Jai Simpkins the first in there. And I've criticized him before on this podcast last year about, you know, setting an example and being a leader, but maybe, you know, he does need a little bit of that. You know, a bit of fight in him. There was a scuffle that broke out on the back of Cam Zohar getting angry at someone, but you know, that's Cam Zohar blueprint, you know what I mean?
Okay. We've got 8 minutes left on this chat. So let's do Sean Attlee Club Champ votes. I'll give you my three and we can discuss. So
I haven't seen these yet, by the way.
No, we haven't actually talked about this. So let's keep, keep it brief. Three votes, Paul Curtis, two votes, Harry Sheezel, one vote, Tristan Cherry.
Yeah.
Podcasting.
I don't know about Sheez. Be honest.
Yeah, no, I think he was the most calm.
I thought he was good. I thought he had a really, really great game.
Always reliable. I said this to you at the ground. He's the only player on the team that when he gets the ball can find someone who's open. Everyone else just kicks
had
it.
Had a very quiet game by his standards, though.
His standards, yes, but once again, one of the most highest possession getters on the ground. So
I think I would agree with Paul Curtis. I would probably swap Cherry and I'd probably swap Sherry and Cheese. I would give Sherry the two and I would give Cheese the one.
Anyone else? I don't think there's anyone else to throw in there, really. I thought about
there this. There isn't. Thing. I thought I would give McKercher an honourable mention. I thought he was really exciting yesterday and I think that he showed me that he's definitely going to be a star in the future. But I think those three are probably the best on ground. I would just put Sherry. I'd swap Sherry and Cheese. That'd be the only change I'd make.
All right, Curtis.
So Sherry, that's what Josh is going to do. Because
that's what I'm going to do.
I'm the boss.
Happy wife, happy life. So we're swapping that around. Okay. All right. Well, that was easy. I thought we'd debate that a little bit more. But when I looked through it, McKercher was the next one, I think, but there's nothing to debate anymore. Larky, no, I think Larky's harsh on that too. I'll shout out Larky. Going on from that, let me just tell you who I put as the best and worst on the ground. We'll skip over
Larky
the worst.
Probably could have had.
That was a good lucky game.
Well.
A few contested marks and kicked three. And
in his 100th, you know, in his 100th game.
100th game, yeah. Happy 100th game, Nick. So hang on, what have I got? Oh, I'm on the wrong note. Sorry. Talk amongst yourselves, guys.
I'll say one highlight that I had yesterday before you go to this.
Talk about the McKercher run. Go on.
That's not what I'm going to talk about.
What? Was there another?
I saw Kane Turner at the game yesterday.
Oh, yes. Yes, we did see Kane Turner out and Aiden Bonner outside the
and
ground.
Aiden Bonner. And shout out Aiden Bonner for joining me for pregame wondering and giving me the lowdown on Nick Larkey's
Go to the Besties
order.
Instagram page, guys, and look at the latest video with Marnie did outside the ground. I do feature on it, but more importantly, Aiden Bonner features on it, which was
shout
best,
out Dylan if you're listening. Aiden Bonner's number one
yes,
fan.
Yes, Dylan, your man. You know, sorry we could see him one more time and you weren't there, but look,
next time.
Yeah, they're the apples, mate. Okay, so best on ground for me, Sheezel, Curtis, McKercher, Sherry, Larky, Lazaro. We just to touch quickly, Lazaro, I think, played really well, should not be
he was
next
really,
week,
really, really good.
Yep.
Yeah.
Really put in a shift. Larky, and we've talked about the rest of them, so we won't last too long on that. I don't think there's anyone else really you could put in. I know some people were sort of talking about Tucker and that sort of stuff. Still thought, like, he was fine once again.
I thought Tucker played well. I don't think but Tucker's one of these guys that...
Low impact, but he didn't do anything glaringly bad, but didn't do anything
no,
like,
I
to
actually
change the
think
game.
He is low possession and, like, mid-impact. Mm. Kicked a nice goal. Kicked a very nice goal.
Yeah. So look.
Shout out Darcy Tucker.
Okay. Okay.
If you're listening.
Worst for me, and I've put worst, not needs more this week because they deserve an absolute scathing. Biggie, worst on the ground. Simpkin, second worst on the ground by far. Look, Fisher, I don't necessarily think he was bad, but as a high value recruit, needs to be better. Even if you're playing in the position you should be or not, mate, doesn't matter. You got to do more. Dersma, look, love the kid, going to be a star, just does nothing around the
we
ground.
We need more.
Need more. Harsh, but hey, that's where we're at. And Sellers, he's had 3 touches in 2 weeks.
Yeah,
we were talking a little bit about this before. I think, you know, I did say this before he came in, saying I don't think Sellers is going to be the answer. I'm excited to see him play and I really want him to do well. He's playing really well in the VFL, but realistically he's an undrafted player who no one wanted to pick up in drafts. Yes, I'd probably swap Finbar for him next week to try something, but I don't think Finbar would be able to do much more. He's a lighter frame. If anything, he's less ready.
I think Sellers needs a bit of time.
Yeah, but then there's the thing, like, what is our forward line going to do? If Sellers stays in, I'm fine with
the
that.
The forward line's still functioning well with Sellers in there. Paul Curtis
Sellers
was excellent yesterday.
Like,
Eddie Ford was excellent yesterday.
I agree, but
yesterday.
Sellers needs to find
Cam
a way to do
Zerha
something.
Probably. He'll get
you know,
there.
Like, but he didn't even lead. Like, this is the thing I'm saying. Like, in the pocket, he's standing there and they're just calling for it in the goal square. He's just kick it long, kick it long. Anyway, look, I don't want to go on about that. Look, if Sellers plays, fine. If he doesn't, fine. I don't care anymore. We've got no other options down there. So it's him or Finbar, but they'll both produce about the same. I hope, look, we love Finbar. Seems like a bit of a cult hero already, the big moose. But
I love Finbar. What a great guy.
I hope he gets his shot and I hope I'm completely wrong. But these guys also weren't drafted. So please just keep that in mind, guys, when you are saying, this is the guy we need. No one took him in the draft for a reason. Not because they're bad players, but they're just not as talented as the other guys. And yeah. Okay. We've got 2 minutes left, so let's wrap it up. Marnie, give us 30 seconds of inspirational sort of speech to motivate us to go into next week's game and why we should always think North Melbourne are going to win the premiership.
The day you give up and the day that you stop showing up to games in the game, the day that you decide that you've had enough of the club, is going to be the day where this club turns things around and you're going to sit there with regret that you weren't there to ride the lows,
yeah,
then also, you know, to enjoy the highs. If it hurts and if you're upset, it's because you care. And we've said this so many times
Very
on the
true.
Show today and we've said this previously, to stick by the club. It's easier said than done and it has been a really difficult opening 6 weeks to the season, but things will turn and we just need to ride the wave. You can ride the wave with us on socials, Further North Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Hello. And also don't forget to send in your voice memos. We play them every show. 10 to 15 seconds of your best, hottest takes to furthernorthpod@gmail.com.
Absolutely. So just to sign off with that, thank you, Marnie. Couldn't have said it better myself. I think the only other thing I can add to that is, yes, it will turn, but I think we're a long, 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 long way away. So please, I know I need to mentally prepare for another probably 3-4 years minimum of being bottom four. I don't want to believe that, but until they give me a reason just really bank in for a tough time, but don't stop supporting. Please get to
and
the
game. And
we can
all do this together. We're all in this together.
High School Musical, Troy Bolton sort of style. We're all in this together. So is that the right one? Is that High School Musical?
We're all in this together.
What a track. Okay, we're about to finish. Well, that's enjoy the scene, guys. What a way to sign off. Yeah, it's great. We'll talk to you guys in the preview pod of next week, and stay strong and pretty please.
Bye, guys.